Welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show that lifts the lid on New Zealand's distilling magic. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf, your guide to the flavours, the people and the inspiration behind our top local spirits. We'll hear what drives these distillers to create their signature blends and maybe discover a new favourite along the way. So whether you're a gin lover or a whiskey wizard, join us on the ride and always keep it classy and drink responsibly.
Kia ora and welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf. I'm Susie Carrig. Today we're heading to Arrow Town, that little gold rush town nestled beneath the peaks of Central Otago, to share a story of a distillery that started in a garden shed and that just keeps striking gold. Rifters began with two builders, a copper still, and a backyard experiment. Fast forward a few short years and they've taken home some of the biggest awards in the business, including just winning the world's best Navy gin. It's a story of mateship, mountains, and making something beautifully local. And with us to tell the story is Philip Riley, part of the founding team and the driving force behind the day-to-day magic at Rifters. Kia ora, Philip, and welcome.
Kia ora, Susie. Nice to be with you.
Thank you. Now, let's rewind to the start. Hamish and Stu were two builders fooling around in the backyard shed in 2020. What was it about gin that drew them in?
Well, the two boys had a bit of a dream. They got on a bit of a yarn when they were building Stu's man cave, which is now the distillery. And it's sort of growing from there. So their dream was to crossbreed building and gin. It's probably one of the most, one of the most uncommon occurrences of being able to crossbreed two opposites to make something. But it comes down to the craftsmanship of Stu's building company and his fine eye for detail before he releases something. So he has a really, really keen taste for gin himself. He loves it. And he's always keen on the whole bringing forward those craftsmanship details that he has in his building history and in innovation.
Right. Okay. So then you weren't far behind. How did you get involved with Hamish and Stu and what drew you into their project?
So we have a local commerce group here in Queenstown, and I was the operations manager for a local hotel. And Stu was looking for a venue. So I ran a 5-star hotel. He had a 5-star product. And I was like, hey, let's team up. I can showcase my hotel really, really well. And you can showcase your products with the same audience we want to wow and get influence from. So from there, our friendship sort of blossomed. He was like, oh, do I need to buy glasses? Do I need to pay rent? You know, all the hireage stuff. I was like, no, it's two really cool businesses working together where we could really leverage each other here, utilizing the business community to showcase both products. So we decided, our friendship sort of started there. Now, running in hotels is a very different angle to running a distillery. I sort of came on board around 2023, a couple years into the game. I came on board as a shop assistant for their tasting room. Back then, we had a few more staff than just myself and two part-timers. We had a salesperson and a full-time distiller on top of that. So we've been through a bit of change since then, but we can probably talk a little bit about that later.
Yeah. But you yourself actually have quite a history in distilling.
So, yeah, a little history. My history dates back to 2009 over in London. I was a flight attendant and working for a pretty cool airline over there on an exchange from Australia. So I was based out of Australia, but I was on exchange to London. I did my qualifications over there as a part-time gig. And never thought I'd actually put it to practice here in Aotearoa or anywhere in the world. I just took it up as part of the hospitality business. And so you can explain to customers, you know, what Solera means, or, you know, what a compound gin is, or all those wonderful things. And, you know, taking those technical aspects and dumbing it down for the general public. That sounds weird, but that's what I did it for. It took 12 months to sit down in a classroom at night to do night school, but here I am now.
Wow. Okay, so your role as the general manager seems to stretch across then everything, as you said, from operations to storytelling and the distilling. What does a typical day look like for you at Rifters?
No day is the same. No day is definitely the same. So we always got running random things going on at the moment. Like I'm making currently this morning started off with a minus 6 degrees start. Our shed isn't well insulated, as you can probably see that I'm wearing a beanie, a hoodie, and four other layers underneath it. And I'm surrounded by a small section of our distillery, which is curtained off with a short roof so we can heat it. So you know, the first thing is this morning, put the heaters on because it's bloody cold. No day is the same. So, we're doing everything from marketing to sales. You talk about it, distilling.
It's everything.
Stu's heavily involved as well. And we do have two part-timers. It's not just myself. The only full-time person on the business. So, you know, name anything that the business needs done, I'll do it, including plumbing.
So in a small team like yours, there is nowhere to hide. What's been the most surprising or rewarding part of the journey for you personally?
Well, a rewarding and surprising part of the journey so far is actually winning the world's best navy gin. We believe in our products. However, that product is, I thought it was great just for myself, you know, but it is a, you know, it's world renowned. A lot of people have asked me for the recipe, which I can't give, unfortunately. But, you know, it's such a rewarding thing being able to make an amazing product that is well loved by our community, not just here in Central Otago, but across our nation. You know, you walk into a bottle shop and they go, oh, we love your products, we love your bottle. And then you start talking to them and they realise that it's not a giant business. We don't have 20 staff. It's just me full time. And so they're like, it's very consistent in customer service. they're always like, oh, everything gets done nicely. The T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. And you know, the packing slip's always in the box. It's because I never forget. And if I do, it's just a really bad day at the office. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go on a little bit. The name Rifters pays homage to Central Otago's gold mining past, but it also captures that whole sense of foraging and discovering. How does the whole theme carry through into your distilling and brand?
So foraging is at the heart of gin. So you go back before commercial days, you've got, you know, distilling going on over in London, and you know they're not going to the shop to buy their ingredients; they're out foraging for it, or they're trading it. You know, those things sort of date back to, you know, history in our own times. You know, the miners came here from motherland, so between Australia and London or England, and so they brought those techniques and those traditions with them. So, foraging around our wonderful town. We sort of look around the place and go, hey, there's a crack in the earth over there. That's where such and such would have got gold from. So we could easily, you know, forage for it. We can go rift for it. We also date back to the times inside the museum. People don't refer to the gold miners as gold miners. They also refer to them as rifters. So they go up the rifts and the valleys and the cracks in the earth to go find that elusive nugget.
Right, I see. So that comes through your whole story. Now, Arrowtown isn't just where you're based, it's also infused into every part of what you do. How important is the place to the Rifters story?
100%. You couldn't do this in Auckland. You know, we look at Arrowtown and the surrounding Central Otago region as a playground, lots of inspiration. We have heaps of inspiration. Like, I look out at our landscape at the moment, it's snow-capped mountains, pristine waters, all these wonderful things that are going on that people just wish they had on their doorstep. Now, that storytelling revolves back into what we do. We go out there foraging for the ingredients, or we go look for partners in foraging. So we have wineries around our region that love us on their grounds. We know, go take some gorse away for them, produce it into something pretty yummy. And, you know, working with people around our region to tell not only the landscape story, but also the community story.
Okay, so let's go a little bit about the foraging. Rifters, and the name Rifters takes its name from the original Gold Rush Rifters or Fossickers. But you are literally foraging for the botanicals, like you said. You've got wild thyme, bay leaf, elderberry, and more. How do you decide what's in a batch and how seasonal is your botanical palette?
We're super lucky down here. So, as you said, we've got wild thyme, we've got bay leaf, elderberries, we've got manuka as well, we forage for all those wonderful things. Our palette isn't necessarily seasonal. We get ahead of the game. We know one of our gins is super popular nationwide. That's our Quartz gin, named after the quartz scene that runs through Arrowtown, where you find the elusive nugget, of course. We get ahead of the game. So when that time is, you know, at its peak, we'll go pick that and we start making gin ASAP, basically, for that skew or that thing, that run. Basically, we just put our heads down and go for it like the clappers. Like at the moment, winning this award, we've decided we're going to extend our Royal range, our Royal gin that won the recent award, for another limited edition batch because it's so popular. And it's only fair we did that to let people try it because, you know, it's a fun one. We work with a lot of places around, you know, bay trees are quite common down here and underutilized. So a lot of people love us going to prune their bay trees. We, like, for instance, citrus, we don't grow citrus down here very well, but we work with a few places in the Hawke's Bay and the Coromandel. Mm-hmm. So we use the outer skins, and we work with local hotels here in Queenstown to pass on those flesh to be made into something else. And then we work with a composting part of the business, which then goes to compost. So there's nothing that goes to waste. So foraging isn't just in the sense of me walking in the beautiful hills in the middle of spring. It also entails me freezing cold winters, going to look for thyme, which we have tarpaulins over in a certain area of our town, to stop the frost getting to it. So, yeah, the other day I was walking amongst about half a foot of snow to go get thyme for a batch. So, we definitely like to use fresh things rather than dried, because fresh is always best, but yeah.
So most of your botanicals are available all year round, or are there a couple that are seasonal?
One of our gins revolves around the season. So our Blossoms gin is a seasonal release, definitely is a seasonal item, but it takes a little while to produce because the flowers that we pick and utilize are over a 3-month period. So we usually make a base gin and we take tinctures of the flowers. There's two reasons for that. We don't really want a gin to taste like Nana's undie drawer with lavender, really potent, and roses and all those things. Yeah. So we like to be able to be in control of the amount of oils that go into it. So our Blossom gin is what we call a floated gin or a tincture-based gin with a nice base to it. And every year it tastes different, and that is on purpose. And the followers that go with that gin just love every year it's different because it tells a story of the region. You know, those lavender was in full bloom, or was it the outer flower that year, or was it the orange? You know, all those wonderful things that come together. Or even the gorse flower. The gorse flower every year changes as well. Mm-hmm. Either it's really oily and brings out a nice creaminess, or it's not oily enough and you don't taste it. So, yeah.
Fascinating. So, okay, let's talk about your stunning location. Dudley's Cottage in Arrowtown is a quaint as tasting room up a little cottage path just off the main road. Can you tell us the history of the cottage, and how does being steeped in that historic environment shape your visitors' experience?
Dudley's Cottage is a magical location. At this time of the year, it's got the heater on 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. It is a stone cottage. We like to keep those stones nice and warm all year round. Otherwise, you sit there and freeze your butt off. But the historical nature of it, it goes back to the Butler family. They came to Arrowtown not to go up the gold mines, but to service the gold miners. They were very much a entrepreneurial family. Very much like our little business. So it kind of goes hand in hand. So the Butlers, they didn't just live there. They had a trading shop out of there. And later on, they also started the local tavern or pub, which is now the Arrowtown Bakery situated. They were basically the proprietors for the township, which is really cool. And they also used to sell gin at the shop.
Wow.
Yeah, so back down in Dudley's Cottage, which is now called Dudley's Cottage, it used to be Butler's Cottage. The Dudley family came in around the 1920s, and they also have a really big influence on the Chinese gold miners. It was unfortunately, New Zealand had a segregation point in the history, and Dudley's Cottage was it. So the Chinese settlement people weren't allowed into the European village, and the European village wasn't allowed into the Chinese settlement. Now, the Dudleys really cemented that relationship between the two parties. You know, if someone in the Chinese village needs the GP, they'll go to Mrs. Dudley. Mrs. Dudley would then skirt off into the township, go collect the GP and escort him into the Chinese village. There was this amazing connection with Mrs. Dudley and the Chinese. She treated them with highly respectful, very respectful and with dignity, where, it's one of the very few segregation points we ever had in New Zealand's history where the two cultures didn't intertwine. So it's a really cool historic point.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Okay, so let's talk about the bottle. For the listeners out there that like the pretty bottle for your cabinet or trolley, then this is one that you need to add to your collection. The bottle is like nothing else on the shelf. It's a bit vintage. It's a bit wild. I've heard that it was inspired by a museum visit as well as the mountains that surround you. Can you tell us about the whole design journey of the bottle?
So the design journey is, how do we encapsulate history, architecture, and a point of difference on the shelf? So we'll go down the history path. We've got a taper that tapers nicely. That is a nod to the old style gin bottles that you'd get. They used to be topped and tailed in cases. On the nose, we've got the old gin snout, or the pig snout as it referred to, a cork. We don't have a screw cap, so a nice cork gives it a nice tight fit. Along the sides, we've got the beautiful ridges. Those ridges represent two things: the sides of a gold mine, or gold pan, I should say, and then the tops of it are equally is important. These are the five peaks of the Wakatipu Basin. And then we've tied in another aspect of our landscape and gone, how do we encapsulate those beautiful blue lakes and rivers of our region? So we've got the beautiful blue lake or river of our region, so Lake Hayes, reflected nicely in the blue colour of the bottle.
Wow. Yeah, it is absolutely stunning. And it certainly does stand out on the shelf. Right, now let's talk about what's inside those beautiful bottles. You started with gin, but you've since expanded. What spirits are in the lineup now, and what's inspired you to branch out?
So there's nothing like collaboration. So here in Arrowtown, we have another powerhouse brand, not just ourselves. We've got Royal Burn Station. So Royal Burn is Carlos and Nadia. They run that. They grow fantastic grain up there. They make great beer. And so we've collaborated with them to create a whiskey. Now, this has been something that's been on the go since 2022. Been lots and lots of fun for Stu and Hamish and Carlos. And Nadia likes whiskey now. She doesn't like whiskey in general. Maybe this is because we created something off her land. She quite likes it. Yeah, we've got the whiskey down, so we've got that on the go. So we've got two batches and about 50-odd casks. So it's not just one or two casks. We've been busy looking after it. We can't actually wait for the next batch to release. So we're doing a field report, and chapter two will release in October. Huge amount of people already wanted. I've got emails, about six emails this week already going, hey, can we get the next batch of gin and, you know, for the next chapter? I was like, yeah, you can in October. What else is there? We do a cheeky little vodka, which is a nice thyme-infused vodka, but it's not too herbaceous. It's a nice soft style gin, vodka. We've got other things on the go, but I can't actually talk about it freely, unfortunately. I can say they taste delicious, and people will not be disappointed when they try it. It really... We are on a point in our business where creativity and the Rifters brand go hand in hand, and being able to expand different spirits into our repertoire is something that we are damn right looking forward to. It's going to be lots and lots of fun. And I can't wait to share it with the world, really.
Exciting.
But we are really renowned for our gins, and so if we can keep that up, being renowned for our whiskey, our vodka, and anything else we create, I don't think people are going to be very disappointed. They're going to be absolutely craving more.
Okay, so without going into exactly what you are creating, a lot of these recipes in the range are yours. How do you approach creating something new? Is it led by botanicals, gaps in the market, or more a case of you just following your curiosity?
Two things. Following your curiosity is great. You know, you look at what's not on the market at the same time and you go, actually, what happens if we do A, B, C, 1, 2, 3? And you come out with something like the Quartz Gin, which has a huge following. But then you look at the market and you go, what is not in the market and what is? What's working really well? How can you disrupt that? And see how we can take a piece of that pie and actually show you how it's done properly. We like to say that because we usually hit the market properly, not soft. We are very adamant when we release something, we stick with it, and we work hard to make sure it does work. We never admit fail, of course. Hey, look, in all distilleries, I've been talking to a few around the country. They look at us, they admire us, which is kind of cool. They think we're a massive business, like huge conglomerate of people. And I'm like, no, it's just me full time working. You know, I can't take all the credit for all the distillation processes of everything. We've still got really good, fantastic relationships with our previous distillers. We're so lucky on that front. They've gone off to do other better, exciting things like brewing beer and making wine. Loads of fun in that sense. So yeah,
great. Okay, so let's talk about the awards. This year, you took home some serious awards, including the world's best Navy Gin. I was speaking to you on the phone just as you'd received the email. You really should attend the London Awards ceremony. What was Hamish, Stu and yourself's reaction when you first heard, and what did that sort of moment mean for you in the little town, in Arrowtown?
So we were a little bit beside ourselves. We're like, oh, okay, maybe it's just a generic email they sent to everybody. And then it was followed up with a phone call. So we didn't really take it serious to start with. And so I think you called between the phone call and the second email, which was kind of fun. Because we were just like, should we go? Oh, no. I think everyone else got the email. Then they rang us and said, hey, you need to, what are you doing on this day? Do you want to come to London? And, we were like, oh, we're not really in town for dinner, sorry. It's a 19,000-kilometre trip just to go there to have dinner. We can't really just afford that for starters, let alone not win something. And they were like, you have to read between the lines here. I can't tell you anything else. And I was like, okay, if you can't tell me anything, do I need to blink twice to say yes, that I've won something? And we had a bit of a cheeky chat with the people there, and they were just like, you won't be disappointed. If you turn up, you will not be disappointed. But yeah, we've had a busy year in the last 18 months with awards, but I'll talk about that later. But it was just one of those moments where I got off the phone from the World Drink Awards and gone, Stu, I think we've got a 19,000-kilometre trip we need to take. I don't think we're going to be disappointed. This is what they're telling me. And they were like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then Stu was like, oh, let's put it to Kate, because Kate's Stu's wife. Let's sound her out, see what she thinks. It's a good person to have in the team to bounce ideas off. And we've sort of like, oh, it's the title. What's the title we're up for? Oh, well, we're the country's, the winner for the country, for New Zealand, for the gin, the Navy Strength Gin. I was like, oh, maybe we're just getting a certificate for that. So I made another phone call, and they're like, no, you're a finalist in the top five. They had to be really blunt. I was like, okay, if I'm the finalist, that means I went, did we win? And again, the second conversation was like, no, you have to read between the lines here, Philip. Yeah, it was one of those silly moments, but it's one of those moments. We walked into the Waldorf Hotel on the Strand in London, and we still, both of us, both Stu and myself, looked at each other and we're like, we better get a photo at the front of the hotel. And so we did that, and we're in tuxedos, and we walk in and we get greeted by, oh, Mr. Riley, Mr. Clark. I was like, oh, yes, that's us. It was very prim and very proper, and it was a bloody good night, actually. But I didn't realise, you know, we were seated at a table that was close to the front, and one of the organisers said, we put you here because you came the furthest. I was like, oh, thanks, you know, front row seats. And then I got talking to the person beside me, and they were like, oh, yeah, just over this side here is the head judge, David. I was like, oh, okay. And then over far side there, we had someone else who was one of the judges, and we all got chatting, and they're trying to get into my brain for distilling, and one of them was a distiller themselves, and the other one had been a distiller, and it was one of those moments where, you know, we get pulled up on stage as a finalist, and that's cool, and then we're sitting there, and we're standing there, and there was about, oh, I'm going to say, there's probably like 10 people on stage, so there's 5 distilleries from all around the globe, and they called our name out, and Stu was like, yeah, beauty. And I was just beside myself, like, this doesn't feel right. But, you know, it doesn't, is this a dream? You know, a little distillery in New Zealand at the bottom of the country, next stop was Antarctica, took out this amazing title, which is serving us really well now. And people taste it. We know that it was a good product. People used to drink it all the time and tell us this is fantastic. But it, just to have that, the judges who are, you know, at a pinnacle of their point, they're some of the best judges in the world, picking a product blind, that accolade means the world to us, you know. And the trip to London was fantastic. It was a good
trip. I'm sure. I saw the photos. It looked as if you had an absolute ball, the pair of you.
It was a quick 3-day trip.
I can imagine.
We left on Monday afternoon and we got back on Sunday night.
Yeah, yeah, you spent more time in the air than you did actually on the ground.
And sleeping's for the dead, so
yeah. Exactly. right, Philip, it's the end of the working week. What is your go-to Rifters drink and how do you enjoy it?
I've got two. Now, summer and winter. Now, we're in winter at the moment, so I'm a Negroni fan.
Oh.
So I like a strong drink. Not pushing product at all, but, you know, the reason why we make some of the stuff is because we like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
A Pinot Noir barrel-aged gin, one that we create, is deliberately designed for a Negroni. So it brings in those nice earthy tones with the barrel behind it. And in summer, there's nothing like Royal on Ice.
Ooh, okay.
Good Friday drink. I'm a one drink sort of person on a Friday.
Yeah.
I make it count. So something strong.
Yeah. Well, right. Your passion and your care and the team put into every bottle really does shine through. From the gold fields to the gin shelves, Rifters is a story with real hearts. So, Philip, thank you so much for joining me today and telling the story.
Hey, you're super welcome, Susie. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And if you're in Arrowtown or Queenstown, be sure to visit the Rifters Tasting Room at the historic Dudley's Cottage, or check them out online and grab yourself some award-winning spirits for your cabinet. Until next time, stay curious, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories. Cheers!
That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more behind the bar stories.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.